Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Have you seen some of those videos of guys like hugging their kids for the first time when they see them in the bubble? Or Marcus Morris kissed his little baby boy right before. Like, they were able to walk up to him next to the court because there's nobody in the arena, and he's able to kiss his son like right before. And I'm watching this and I'm going, boy, I hate to tell you, you are genetically predisposed to being a real a-hole. I'm letting you know right now, you're Marcus Morris's kid. I don't want to ruin this for you, but you're probably going to be a jackass when you're older, kid. I hate to tell you.
I honestly stay away from those videos because I get too moved by them.
Do you?
Sean, what did I just tell you? Drama is draining. I don't want to. There's times where I just don't want to feel things. Okay. I don't want to feel anything at all. I used to use alcohol to not feel things, right. But now I just stay away from emotional reunited videos. Those military ones, man. Okay. When all of a sudden the ump takes his mask off at the Little League game, and it's your dad that just got back from his tour in Afghanistan.
Yeah,
oh my God!
To me, these videos of the NBA players hugging or kissing their kids—they're nice. They're whatever. That's what I was just gonna say. If we're power ranking the emotional videos. Yeah. I would say that the returning parent from a military or returning spouse from a military excursion or assignment that comes back and surprises them. Yes, like is dressed in like a gym teacher outfit with shades and a mustache on, and their kid turns their back for a minute and they take off the disguise and tap the kid on the shoulder, and he turns around and they're hugging like, oh my God, like I'm blubbering like a fool in my own living room. You know what's very underrated? Walk-ons getting scholarship videos.
Yeah, those are cool. Those are really cool.
Those are very underrated. And the team's all going crazy for him, and you know the kid probably most of the time comes from a background where, you know, a lot of times these are guys who are paying their way through hoping that that's what they end up getting a scholarship. Well, yeah. And they're really expensive
some of those guys,
schools.
There have been like some guys that are walk-ons that are like living in their car. You know? That's very emotional. The other one, too, and these ones are harder to find, which makes it that much more impactful when you see them. Yeah. It's like when there's some new medical device or technology that lets somebody see color for the first, like these eyeglasses, like they put them on and they see color. Or oh my gosh, I'm about to tear up just talking about it. The little girl that can hear her mother's voice for the first
who's
time.
Who's like 3 years old.
Cochlear implants, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a tough one, too. That's a tough one, too. Now, at the other end of
let's go to break early.
At the other end of the spectrum, I would say is any video involving a Karen not wanting to wear her mask in a Target. That's at the other end of the spectrum. I cry from laughter at those.
Honestly, you know what I'll say about those?
I cry
Sean,
for the employees at that place.
The thing about those videos, and this goes with a lot of other things, like kids misbehaving at a like the less COVID related or politically related, like kids misbehaving at a store or something. I have a hard time watching those videos because, like, I think almost the vast majority of the time, there's a little bit of mental illness at least.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot bit of mental illness going on there where it's like, man, like, I was at a restaurant a couple years ago on Richmond. I won't say which one it was. But this guy, I won't say which one it was because the manager was acting like a jackass. There was a guy who was causing a scene, and he was very clearly just out of his mind, you know. And he was talking about some kind of conspiracy theory. And the manager was, like, engaging him in debate on this. And he was livid. The manager was livid about the guy's actual argument. And, like, dude, this guy is flat-out crazy. Like, there's no reason. Like, how are you getting angry at this? Because he's saying something about – I can't remember whether it was Trump or Obama, whoever it was. But the guy was getting in that actual debate. And that's – I feel like that's what happens when you watch these videos. You're like – Instead of seeing a person thinking like, okay, this person's in a bad place mentally, all you think is like, yep, you see, everybody who disagrees with me is exactly like this person now.
Yeah.
And that's not it. I feel like it's detrimental to society in debate.
Amy showed me a video last night of some lady, an adult woman who was at some grocery store or department. So I don't remember which one, so I don't want to name because I might get it wrong. But she was just bawling into her camera. She took out her camera and she's bawling for 3 minutes about how they wouldn't let her buy things there because she wasn't wearing a mask. I mean, like, blubbering, like the world was ending. And I'm like, Aim, this person's not well. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. This person is not, I mean, I don't even know that they're faking it or whatever. Like, this person is not well. You know what we're getting multiple of on the text page? Seth and I are talking about viral videos that get you crying like a child. Multiple people texting in the military dogs reuniting with former handlers.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
The dogs, any kind of animal that, like, remembers a human being that, you see that with a wild animal sometimes, right, when they go back and the trainer that rescued it and then set it off into the wild and then all of a sudden they get reunited.
Yeah,
that's pretty intense.
Rex Chapman has a lot of videos like that.
You know about being one of those dogs, those service dogs? It's you realize, I was reading about one of them. They work a double shift, which sounds hard, right? Like, oh, my, these things are working like 16 hours a day. Like, they have one handler come in, they'll sniff bombs, and then they'll do another. And you think, oh, my gosh, that's a lot of work. And then you realize these dogs are playing for 16 straight hours.
Yeah.
Like, their work is like what dogs want to do.
Love what they're doing.
They get a little something, and it's awesome. It's just a big game to them.
Right.
So they have this job, which is 16 hours a day of hanging out with their humans and looking for toys and stuff.
Yeah.
In their mind, like a baggie of heroin is just a chew that they're never allowed to chew.
That's right. Yeah. It may as well be a rubber elephant or something like
that. Yeah.
All right. Download the radio.com app, radio.com rewind. Carry us with you wherever you go. And, of course, the insider access, you get the exclusive interviews leading up to the Texans opener next week. We've got the world's biggest pregame going to take you up to it. Texans and Chiefs right here. The Texans play here on Sports Radio 610. Seth, the other headline we did not get to was Jadeveon Clowney and his free agency. It looks like it's coming to an end here pretty soon. The games all start up next weekend. And the Saints are now appearing to be the team. I won't say they're in the pole position of the driver's seat. They are the late entrant into the dance. The Seahawks have always sort of been in the mix because that's where he played last year. The Titans have been the team that's kind of been lurking the whole time. As you've mentioned, the Cleveland Browns want Clowney pretty badly, it would appear. The New Orleans Saints are putting, quote, an all-out blitz on Clowney. And according to a tweet that I just saw a few moments ago from one of the insiders on NFL.com. Not NFL.com, ESPN, Diana Rossini. The Saints are all in on landing Clowney. Sources tell me they are sending a member of their coaching staff to Houston, where Clowney lives, to meet and discuss why New Orleans is the best spot.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
So they're doing the in-home recruiting. It's like college recruiting all over again.
I'm not doing this to try to make any kind of a point. I'm genuinely wondering. Like, I'm not sitting here saying, like, how dare they? Is that within the rules right now? Are you allowed to, like, just go visit somebody at their house? Like, I guess.
Are you saying for COVID reasons? Or
yeah,
NFL
I have
reasons?
No idea. Yeah, for COVID, I guess so. Yeah, because outside the bubble, guys are able to do well. They have their guidelines.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about that. I didn't know if it seemed like that would be something there'd still be a moratorium on. But whatever.
If it's not, Diana Rossini just dimed them out. So
yeah.
she just ratted them out. So what? Do you care to take a stab at where you think Clowney winds up, or if you were Clowney, who you would have at the top of your list?
I bet he ends up in New Orleans.
Okay,
I think that it makes a whole lot of sense. Now the Saints would have to jockey some money around.
That's easy enough.
Yeah, I know it's easy. Yeah, I mean, but it takes a little time, right? They got to jockey some money around with some of their players and renegotiate and get him there, get him quarantined for 3 days. And then it's off to the races.
The good news is you've got enough high-salaried players on the Saints that I'm sure would be happy to take that salary in one lump sum as a bonus and spread it out over the rest of their deal to open up cap space.
You know
Michael Thomas, I'm sure, would gladly take his $22 million or whatever it is in one big lump sum as a bonus so that they can just spread the money out as opposed to getting paid over every 17 weeks. Because that's how they do it, for people who don't know. They just turn salary with players into bonus money, and that means you can just push the money into the future like a credit card, and voila, there's your $12 million in cap space that you need to get yourself a Clowney.
Sean, I'm just thinking about Clowney in New Orleans. That dude might never leave. He might just never. He might just get himself a balcony suite somewhere, overlooking a parade route.
Is Clowney a party guy? I know Clowney's
He's not like a hardcore. Like, he doesn't have a reputation or anything. But
yeah.
I think he's fun. He's just fun,
yeah.
Right? He's just a fun guy. I feel like he could be a complete teetotaler, like never drink at all and still just enjoy the vibe and the atmosphere of New Orleans. And we also know he at least every now and then likes to go to Lake Charles.
That's right.
So that's
it's true. Like, he does like to roll the dice at Lake Charles.
Yeah. Does he not just have a Louisiana vibe to
him?
No
question about that. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's like for any kind of nefarious like reasons like he can't stay out of the clubs or anything. Not that at all. He's just got that vibe about him.
He's missed at press conference time. He's fun.
Yeah,
he's a fun player.
He looks like a guy who's just born to have beads around his neck.
Hell yeah.
You know?
Hell yeah. All right. Are we about to learn a whole lot more about the sign-stealing scandal with the Astros than we care to know? We will tell you why that may be next. The Texans are hosting a drive-in watch party for the opener next Thursday in the Orange Lot at NRG Park, and it's presented by HEB, and it's going to be a huge deal. Cheerleaders, Toro, other fans out there. And the tickets are only available for season ticket holders, but we've got the last parking spot at that party, and we're going to give it away this afternoon on the afternoon show. I want to mention that because I've not mentioned that yet today.
Ooh,
Clint Sterner in the show between 3:45 and 4:00 today, Seth. Your chance to win a spot at the NRG, the watch party at NRG Park presented by HEB for the opener. That'll be cool. That'll be fun. Hey, man, it's going to be hard to find opportunities to commune and enjoy football fellowship with other fans. This is a chance to do that. So you want to spend some time with your fellow Texan fans, cheering the Texans on to hopefully what we hope is a victorious Thursday night that you will be able to hear right here on Sports Radio 610.
That's one of the things people, like, I don't want to talk about TV ratings again forever, but it's just one real quick thing. The fact that people aren't able to go watch in bars this year as much or go watch big group parties, there won't be as much of that going on. They're wondering for football especially because people do that more with football than they do with baseball and basketball.
Yeah.
Like, how is that going to affect? That'll probably be good for ratings because they use, like, some formula to try to calculate how many people are watching at bars and everything, but nobody's ever really trusted it. So that'll be one reason. I think that, I don't know, the election and however people feel about social justice and all that, I think there is some effect. I don't know how big it is. But I think the total sum effect is probably going to be a pretty good year for ratings in the NFL.
Yeah, I just think the scarcity of sports. I think sports coming back. I think there's so much fear from sports fans that we weren't going to have any of this.
Yeah.
That we're, you know, like, I think, you know, with football, I think people are going to lap it up, but we'll see. And I know there's people that feel the opposite way.
Well, but then also, like, none of the other television shows have new shows coming out or anything. They weren't filming. Everybody's shut down. There's very few entertainment options.
So the Astros, Seth, I know the season feels like it just started like a week ago. They're into the home stretch of the season now, and they're 21-15. They've got about a month to go in the season, and they've got a lot on their plate right now with all these injuries they're managing and getting ready for the postseason and things like that. Meanwhile, in the background, there's still that lawsuit from season ticket holders for the Astros regarding the sign stealing. You remember this lawsuit, Seth, where there was a lawyer by the name of Bob Hilliard. He's one of
the
lawyers.
That's the guy down in Corpus, right?
Yes.
He's got a whole bunch of tickets down in Corpus, and he's a big Astros booster. Yeah.
He is representing a big group of Astro season ticket holders who want some sort of retribution, some sort of damages from the Astros for duping them, for playing, for winning a World Series while cheating, with the idea that this was something that people in the organization from the top down knew, and we were being marketed one thing, and then the actuality is behind the scenes, it was another thing. And I know that this is a lawsuit that started a while back. So if you're hearing me talk about this, you're going, yeah, Sean, we know about this lawsuit. We hadn't heard much about it, but we know that this exists. This may be significant. We'll see. They're going to appeal this, but
you know the part that interests me about this case, Sean, is certain elements remind me of when the WWE, at the time it was the WWF, I think, right, had to admit in court that these were scripted events because the New Jersey was going to ban that because it was just too brutal for an actual athletic competition. So they had to go in and say, well, actually, it's not quite what it looks like.
So I feel like,
go ahead and explain that part.
Let me explain what the
latest news
about this is.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were done.
No,
okay.
No, I wasn't.
All right.
So what happened with this within the last day or so is that this thing, which was thought to be a lawsuit that was going to get thrown out, didn't get thrown out by a judge here in Harris County. It actually made it through the part where the Astros looking to get it thrown out. The judge said, no, we're going to move on with discovery here, which, Seth, means there could be depositions for players, for Jim Crane. Now, they're going to the Astros, it looks like, are going to appeal this, and it looks like with appeal they may be able to still get it thrown out. But this is significant because we may get people, Seth, who have said one thing in statements from the team about, I didn't know about this, or in interviews with the media, I didn't know about this, who may now have to go under oath and say that they didn't know about this.
Right.
And perjure themselves.
It's a whole different. Yeah. The one thing, I tend to think that the fact that everybody was given immunity, and the fact that the stories all seem to be pretty consistent when guys are interviewed separately by Major League Baseball. You know, and those guys might not have been facing jail time if they lied, but they might have been facing the loss of millions of dollars if they lied. Personally, I'd rather do 6 months of jail and keep my millions of dollars. So I think that, I don't think that any of those big revelations might come out. The reason I was bringing up the WWE defense was that in that case, the WWE or WWF had to basically admit that these events were scripted. At that point, a lot of people didn't realize that wrestling was staged to the degree that it is.
That was back in the 80s. Yeah. And the reason for that was, Seth, that the wrestling events had to have an athletic commissioner there at the events, which was a cost to Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon didn't want to pay that cost anymore, so he just went into the court and said, no, well, this is not an athletic. I don't need the athletic commission monitoring my events here. This is a staged performance. So
the situation here would be, I think the defense would have to be, okay, look, these people want their money back because they feel like they were duped because the Astros didn't make a good faith effort at winning the right way. And their defense is going to have to be, hey, look, cheating has gone on in baseball pretty much forever, and we've turned a side of a blind eye to it. It's kind of part of the game. Yeah. So, like, it's something we all know, and you try to keep a lid on it, but people are always pushing the envelope, you know?
To me, the most interesting part about this development, Seth, is the depositions, and here's why. Here's what Hilliard, the lawyer for these season ticket holders, says in this interview. Under oath, the full extent of front office and top executive involvement in the genesis of this cheating playbook should finally become crystal clear. Perhaps this permanent stain on a once-proud franchise will fade over some time, but for now and forever, the Astros will wear a label of shame that prevents sports fans, youngsters everywhere from having any respect for the franchise. It's that first part, front office and top executive involvement. If the basis of this lawsuit is that everybody from Jim Crane on down knew about this, and that's why the season ticket holders should get something out of this, I don't know if that's a valid basis for the lawsuit, but I do know that if this thing moves forward, that Jeff Luhnow and Jim Crane are going to get deposed. And these are both guys who have said they knew nothing about this. Jim Crane has said, I didn't know anything about the cheating scandal. Jeff Luhnow has pointed fingers at everybody else in this whole thing.
But with Luhnow, there's hard evidence that, you know, in emails that he was, at least people tried to inform him
and
about
now
it.
Yeah. Somebody in a court of law or in a deposition, he's going to have to go under oath. Now, he can't just put out some innocuous statement that says, well, I knew this or knew that, and then just walk away and be a hermit for a year. He's gonna have to perjure himself if he wants to stick by his story.
If we see these guys come into a courtroom and it's on television, give me your quick assessment of how they are going to look. Now, we've seen AJ Hinch in that interview he did. I thought he looked pretty good. Felt like maybe he hadn't had a haircut in a couple weeks. You know, he's about to do a big interview and he didn't get his haircut. But whatever. So these three characters. Okay. Tell me how they look. Do they look healthier? Do they look beleaguered? What do they look like when they walk into the courtroom?
I think
Jeff Luhnow.
Jeff Luhnow looks the most beleaguered of the three. Mm-hmm. Because he's the one that has not been accountable in all this. He's the one that's pointed the finger at others. He's the one who, quite frankly, I think his legacy was probably the highest of the three that has now taken the biggest hit. Because Hinch was already working off of a negative vibe of Game 7 of the World Series. But Luhnow was viewed as the ultimate deal maker. He gave Hinch everything he needed to go win a World Series, and then Hinch couldn't close the deal. I feel like, and Luno's been off the grid. He hasn't done any interviews. I feel like Luhnow comes in with a lot of facial hair with about 30 extra pounds of paunch.
Facial hair, or even without facial hair, just a little bit of scruff. And I'm getting a kind of a Russell Crowe, Ben Affleck vibe that you're explaining to me. Like, wow, that guy used to be presentable looking, and looking at him now. Okay, AJ Hinch.
I think AJ Hinch comes in quite honestly, looking the same way he did in that sit-down interview he did with MLB.com. I think Hinch has had a weight lifted off of his shoulders by coming clean. He's been honest throughout this whole thing, and he's been accountable, and he's been accountable to himself for not doing something about it. I think A.J. Hinch comes in to this thing very at ease, feeling like, you know, all the things I said in that MLB.com interview, I'm just going to say in this deposition because I'm being honest in this whole thing.
Now this is the one. I know you thought I was going to ask you about Jim Crane, but we've seen Jim Crane plenty over the course of the last year where we haven't seen several of these guys, or at least over the last 6 months or so.
Okay.
Brandon Taubman, the former assistant GM that was
he's
dismissed after his incident in the clubhouse after the ALCS.
They have to spend at least 2 or 3 weeks finding where he is. Because he's now homeless. He's on a street corner just muttering the names of the female reporters that reported his behavior back to he's laying under a bridge at night muttering their names like Arya Stark reciting her kill list before she goes to bed every night.
I'm very much getting a Ryan Howard from The Office vibe.
Yes,
here,
where he's working in a bowling alley.
He used to be the young phenom.
Yes,
and he comes in. He's got like a neck tattoo now or something. And he comes in wearing a frumpled suit that hasn't been worn in the last 9 months and flip flops. And his hair all wild like that alien conspiracy theory guy on the History Channel.
He picked up the suit at a Goodwill on the way to the deposition. Like, he forgot, like, crap, I probably should dress up for this.
And the female prosecutor that is questioning him, he refers to as toots, dear,
broad,
babe, all this stuff. He's like completely
honey.
Inappropriate behavior all the time.
Yeah, hun.
I was like, every time a woman asks him a question, he just kind of sneers and then doesn't answer it.
Have you ever been deposed?
Yeah, I have.
I have too. It's not fun.
It sucks.
It's not fun at all.
It's like, no, my gosh. You know what it feels like? It feels like, Sean, it feels like you're being interrogated because you are.
Yes.
But like when you're a kid and you're trying to cover something, or even if you're not trying to cover something up, like what you feel like your parents think you did something and you know you didn't, but like every answer is going to be judged to the extreme, and it's so hard to give the right answer even if you know you're telling the truth.
It feels like a test. And I was I was involved in a deposition when I was vice president of sales for my company. We were involved in a huge lawsuit. We were suing a company that was a subsidiary of AT&T. This is the ultimate David against Goliath. We're like a small startup suing a subsidiary of AT&T. Like, they could wait us out if they wanted to and just bury us in legal bills, which is kind of what they ended up doing. So, I remember getting deposed in this courtroom in downtown Chicago, and I'm like, this is the first time in my life that I feel like an adult.
Yeah, this is
not
an adult,
when I had kids, not when I bought a house, not when I got a job, not when I had a relative pass away, none of those things. This feels real, because if I give the wrong answer here, there are hundreds of people that might lose their jobs. You know what I mean? Like, it was. I get anxiety every time I go to, between that and my divorce, I get anxiety every time I walk into a courtroom.
The first time, I've been deposed 3 times, and 2 of them were like, they're all right, because it wasn't like I had a dog in the fight necessarily. It was about other people I was being deposed about. The one that wasn't a deposition, but that still, I have about 2 bad dreams a year over this one, was when my parents were in a custody battle and I had to go sit in the judge's chamber. And the judge asked me who I wanted to live with.
No!
And
they were probably taking bets in the back. He was handicapping it. Hey, man, I get a little inside information, but which parent do you like better?
I wish the judge could have, like, given me a little nudge, you know? Like, I wanted to live with my mom, but my dad was super good at guilt trips.
Yeah.
And, like, the judge was telling me, like, listen, I'm not going to tell either of them. But I knew enough at the age of 6 that I shouldn't trust the legal system. So I didn't, like, I can remember sitting there thinking, like, that sounds like the kind of lie that parents tell you that adults tell you when they just want to get some information out of you, you know? So I just sat there. It was the most awkward. It felt like 10 minutes that he waited for me to give an answer, and I never did. I feel a little bit of guilt over the fact that I feel like I didn't have my mom's back, that I didn't say that I wanted to live with my mom.
Street smart Seth Payne at 6 years old is a very,
more
very
just,
funny
more
visual.
Just petrified trying not to cry, Seth Payne.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Texans players totals, stat totals out in Vegas. I want Seth to help me make some money on these. I've got a few that I think are really, really like stealing money. I'm going to bounce these off of Seth Payne, and hopefully you can make some money as well. Stick around. Get rich next. is Payne and Pendergast on a Friday. About an hour from now, our first appearance of the football season with our good friend Lisa Ann. She is moving to mornings with us here to give you fantasy football advice. I know I have a draft next week. I know a lot of you still have drafts between now and the start of the season, so she will help help you get your rankings ready for your drafts next week, so that'll be good. That'll be 9:35 every Friday, so you need that week-to-week advice. She's one of the best. She's got her own show on SiriusXM, and you can give her a follow on Twitter, @TheRealLisaAnn, and getting you ready for fantasy football season. Same way we're getting you ready for the actual football season with the world's biggest pregame show, 100 consecutive hours of coverage leading up to Texans and Chiefs, starting this Sunday afternoon with a Players' War Room, a live Players' War Room at 2 o'clock here on Sports Radio 610, and replays of games from last year. I think the first replay is the Titans game on Sunday night, commercial-free. We're going to replay that. The Week 15, not the Week 17 loss where they started A.J. McCarron. The Week 15 win where they went into Nashville and Whitney Mercilus almost had a pick six. That game. So that'll be on Sunday, Patriots game Monday, the playoff win over Buffalo on Tuesday, and then, of course, the win over the Chiefs in Week 6 on Wednesday. So we've got you covered. We got a ton of good stuff leading up to the opener next Thursday against the Chiefs. The Texans play here on Sports Radio 610. Here's Bill O'Brien earlier this week, yesterday actually, on Deshaun Watson's work ethic.
I mean, every day. I mean, he works hard every day at whether it's mechanics, footwork, you know, obviously, you know, coverage reads, protection reads, communication. He stays after practice. He's watching a lot of film with Tim and TJ. Works hard in a weight room. I know I heard the other day he had a really good weight workout. You know, he was squatting and doing power cleans and things like that. I mean, the guy works hard every day. And, you know, like I've always said, I'm glad he's on our side.
Hey, no, stay the hell out of the weight room, Deshaun. You don't need to be. Right. Remember, Ryan Mallett. Remember, he got the pec tear in the weight room.
Yeah. I'm picturing. How does that happen? Like, does someone poke their head into O'Brien's office? Like, does Cushing poke his head into O'Brien's office? Like, hey, coach, you should have seen Deshaun in the weight room today. He was squatting 950 over there. He's unbelievable.
He power cleaned 350 pounds. Right. That's what's going to make him better on the football field. Right. Power cleans with quarterbacks scare the hell out of me.
Yes.
Like, there's no, man, the risk-benefit ratio just for me, it just doesn't do it. I mean, you got to be over there like to like a pitcher where your workout is doing a little band or something
right.
on the side.
Right.
Which I'm not saying that guys shouldn't work out hard, but with quarterbacks, do all the really, really safe stuff.
There you
know,
there
hit
you
a Nautilus circuit or something.
Well, do the safe stuff because I need Deshaun to stay healthy, Seth, because I am getting ready to fire down, you know, a fair recreational amount on a couple of these season stat total prop bets on Deshaun that I really, really like. And I want to get your thoughts on these.
Okay, let's do this.
Because I know you're not a gambler, which is why I like your thoughts on it, because it's not colored with like, oh, well, the public is thinking this and this is value.
Yeah, some guy with a thick Bronx accent didn't tell me he had the inside edge right, on exactly like what Deshaun had for breakfast. Yeah.
No, you've got 10 years worth of playing in the NFL and a very educated set of eyeballs to tell me if I'm right on this. The passing yards total for Deshaun is over under 4,115.5.
Yeah.
I love the over on this. I think the Texans are going to be throwing the football a little more this year. And I think they're going to be throwing the football a little more for a couple of reasons. One, their weaponry is more conducive to adding some elements to the passing game. Specifically, David Johnson is not Carlos Hyde. And two, with this defense, not knowing if this defense is going to take a big step up, they could be playing in a lot of high-scoring games, especially early in the season.
That's a good point, too. You mean they're going to need to score points?
They may be behind, and they're going to be throwing the ball.
Yeah, okay, especially when you're playing the Ravens and the Chiefs.
Steelers even, you know.
I think at least part of it also is, you mentioned David Johnson and how they've got extra weapons. I think also that it's not even just that they have that weapon. It's that becomes part of the run game. You know, the long handoff, as I like to say, or these short passes and screens. We didn't see the screen utilized last year. That was one of the things that was really frustrating. After bringing Duke Johnson over, it seemed like they didn't utilize and exploit all the opportunities they could have had with screens. I think you see more of that with Tim Kelly. So there is that. I also thought, okay, one of the theories floating around, and I think it's a valid theory, it makes some sense, is, okay, without DeAndre Hopkins, Deshaun Watson's going to spread the ball around and perhaps become a more complete quarterback. I went back to look at Eli Manning Because that was one of the theories about Jeremy Shockey, was that Jeremy Shockey demanded so much attention and that he was such a fly in Eli Manning's ear in a different way. Like, DeAndre never, like, verbally clamored for the ball.
Right.
He was just good. So I went to look at Eli Manning's first year without Jeremy Shockey, and he actually didn't improve by all that much. Now, Jeremy Shockey had gotten injured in 2007, but in 2008, he wasn't any different. So his last year was 2007 with Eli Manning. In 2008, Eli threw for, are you ready for this? 3,238 yards. That used to be a an acceptable quarterback performance back in the day.
3,238 yards. That's like,
that was only 12 years ago.
That's Osweiler-esque.
I know. 3,238 yards, but that's pretty much what he'd be. He'd been throwing between 3,300 and 3,700 yards the previous three seasons. So I don't think like the absence of DeAndre Hopkins is going to turn him into such a complete quarterback that he's just utilizing people all over the field. I think he will improve overall as a quarterback. I do think, though, that some of those targets that went to DeAndre this last season were targets where, yeah, they got the completion, but because DeAndre got so much attention, DeAndre's yards per catch was the lowest it had ever been in his career.
Yeah.
I think some of those throws this year are going to go to people that are further downfield, that have more room to run after the catch. So, yeah, for a lot of reasons, I'll take the over on his total passing
yards.
Okay,
so you like that one. All right, so... Yeah. Seth, I was asked a question the other day about Deshaun by, I think it was Landry and Lopez. It wasn't about Deshaun. My answer was Deshaun, but they said, 4th and 1, you got to have it. You got to run the football. What are you doing? Who runs the football? And I said, I think it's Deshaun Watson. Yeah. I said, I think I would go with some sort of RPO with Deshaun because I don't know that they've got a back that I feel like you hand it to this guy and he goes and gets you that tough yard. I don't know that David Johnson or Duke Johnson are necessarily that guy. So I think you do it with some deception in the backfield and Deshaun's legs. I feel best about that. And this goes with another one that I like, rushing touchdowns in the 2020 regular season. Deshaun's over-under is 4.5. I like the over on that one a little bit, too. I think he's been over 4.5 each of the last 2 years.
You know what I like on this one, Sean?
And
if I had to give you a lock, I would tell you to take the under on this
one. Take the under on this one, okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, it's kind of along the same theme that we were just talking about, becoming more of a complete quarterback, more of a an advanced NFL quarterback. I think a lot of times from year 3 to year 4, a lot of guys take that leap. And I'll think about Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson has really run the gamut from being a rookie who was just kind of tagging along for the ride while they had a really good rushing attack and an incredible defense. And he could, you know, he was coaxed along to where now they expect him to be more complete. And even as a team, like the Seahawks still rush the hell out of the football. In his first 3 years, Russell Wilson had 11 rushing touchdowns. Over the last 5 seasons, he's had 8. And that year 4 was the first year that he really made that big leap into letting others do the dirty work for him. I think Deshaun has more options this year. I think he's going to let others do the dirty work for him. So Deshaun had 14 rushing touchdowns in his first 3 seasons. I think it starts to drop this year.
Okay, all right.
And for good reasons.
Okay, well, you may have just saved me some money there, Seth. Here is Bill O'Brien on evaluating running backs.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of it's not live, but, you know, you can see – on tape, you can look at their vision, you can look at their cutting ability, you can look at their, you know, you can judge whether they would have broken that tackle or not. He ran hard tonight. Scotty did, so that was good to see. But, yeah, I mean, you can tell, you know, you've been watching it for many, many years. You can figure it out.
So the running back that's going to get the lion's share of the carries, at least to start out, Seth, is going to be David Johnson, who he's called an excellent three-down back. Is there anything with respect to David Johnson that you think, hey, one way or the other, whether it's under or over, the totals they have for him are 855 yards rushing, 41 catches, 400 yards receiving, 8.5 touchdowns. I have to say, if those are the numbers, that if Johnson were to wind up around those numbers for the season, I think Bill O'Brien is going to be wildly disappointed. I think he's expecting over on all of those numbers right now.
I think at the very least, just through volume alone.
That's it.
Which really, you know, David Johnson's 2016 season, It was a whole lot of volume. You know, he did some really incredible things, but it was a whole lot of volume, you know, just getting a whole lot of touches that led to a lot of those numbers. I will say, I think I'm going to disagree with O'Brien a little bit when he says that, you know, through the years you watch enough and you can tell in practice whether a guy would have been tackled or not. I think that's precisely the problem with David Johnson. The last couple years, he hasn't been breaking tackles the way he did in 2016.
Yeah.
He kind of, there's contact and he goes down. And it just doesn't look like he's fought and scrapped for it. So I don't know if it's as easy and obvious to tell with David Johnson whether he would have gone down. But let's look at Lamar Miller. When Lamar Miller got to the Texans, he was, you know, considered a guy who was a good receiving threat. People thought maybe he'd been underutilized in Miami. He'd never had more than 216 rushes in a season. His first year with the Texans, he got 268 touches or carries. I think that's what's going to be with David Johnson. Whether he's good or not, it's not going to matter. He's going to get fed the ball because that's what Bill O'Brien likes to do.
Yeah, I lean over on this stuff, but I'm going to stay away from David Johnson the same way I'm staying away from any Texan wide receivers because of the
But I would take the over. Is what I'm saying.
I get it. I think I'm just I don't feel as confident in David. You know, like I feel David Johnson looked good in camp, but I just don't. I don't know that I'm going to fire on the. I don't know if I'm going to put money behind it. Put it that way. The wide receivers, to me, the most interesting numbers on here as relates to wide receivers that have any sort of tangential tie to Bill O'Brien is not Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb, and Will Fuller. Their totals for receiving yards are all in that high 600 to low 800 range. I have no feel for who's going to be healthy, who's going to be the go-to guy. I think it could change week to week. That just feels like a recipe for disaster, picking one of those three. Now, the totals for DeAndre Hopkins, Seth, these get interesting. The totals for DeAndre Hopkins, if someone had told you the total for DeAndre Hopkins receiving yards going into a season 2 years ago would be under 1,200 yards, I think you'd be like, man, fire on that. I mean, he's super prolific, but last year he was under 1,200 yards because of how the Texans used him. Vegas has his total at 1,184.5 yards. Do we expect the Cardinals to use him similarly to how the Texans used him, or... because the total for catches is 95.5. So they still have him at that 10 or 11 yard average per catch kind of deal.
I wonder, this is what I wonder about with Kyler Murray, is does he have the touch as a passer of Deshaun Watson? And I don't think he does. You know, and that's not an insult to Kyler. I think he's got a hell of a lot of talent. It's just Deshaun's got very, very good touch. So when it comes to connecting with DeAndre Hopkins and when Kyler Murray has other receiving options as well as his own legs, I'm not sure that he has the same relationship with DeAndre that Deshaun did.
Yeah.
So I would go the under.
Okay. Even though
DeAndre is not practicing still.
Is he not? He's still
I just read an article from a couple days ago that said this is getting to be kind of a low-key, we got a situation here.
I mean, Seth, with every passing day, it just becomes more and more evident with the O'Brien dynamic with Hopkins and Clowney. Like, Clowney's like, all right, now I'll sign. Training camp's over. Hopkins hasn't practiced yet.
As far as I understand, that's what I had seen, but maybe I haven't gotten the updated story.
Last one. Do you have a feel on this one?
Okay. From 2 days ago, the Cardinals' DeAndre Hopkins, the headline is, return to practice imminent.
Oh, imminent. Okay, so it still hasn't happened yet.
He's been out with an undisclosed injury.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Could be he has a sore contract. Could be what it is. J.J. Watt over under 9 sacks. Aren't you basically betting on essentially the number of games he's going to play by betting on over-under? Like, if he plays a full season, he'll blow past 9 sacks.
You know, Jason Bristol from KHOU, he sent me some stats that I won't reveal them all because I think he's going to use them in our kickoff special we're having. I think it's on Sunday on KHOU. He was going through the sack totals for some notable pass rushers, some legendary pass rushers in their 10th season. And frankly, I was a little shocked by how far off they were from their like normal seasons.
Really?
So I'm gonna go over on this, but with a little bit more hesitation and reservation than I would have previously. Look, in 2018 he had 16.5 sacks.
Right.
That was, you know, less than 2 calendar years ago.
Yeah.
He was turning in that kind of an effort. I think he's gonna be fresher and healthier, and it just must say the same way JJ has surpassed expectations in a lot of other categories. I think he will.
All right, so there you go.
Category.
So Seth has under on catches for DeAndre Hopkins, 95.5. Over for J.J. Watt, sacks, 9. Under for – I like the – you talked me into the under on rushing touchdowns for Deshaun, 4.5, and then over on passing
yards. Which is a good
yards.
Thing. Yeah. It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Right? It's not because he stinks all of a sudden in the red zone. No, it's a good thing.
It's not because he got scared or something.
Right. It's absolutely. All right, so we head into the 9 o'clock hour. Rockets game 1 against the Lakers tonight. Man, no rest for the weary. You turn right around from that game 7 in the Thunder, and now here are LeBron James and Anthony Davis. there is a website saying the Rockets should beat the Lakers in this first round of the playoffs. And it actually, the percentage would tell you that they should beat them pretty convincingly. What's the case for the Rockets there? Well, that's next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.